An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Ta Hui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 9.
The Great Affair. This affair is like the bright sun in the blue sky, shining clearly, changeless and motionless, without diminishing or increasing. It shines everywhere in the daily activities of everyone, appearing in everything. Though you try to grasp it, you cannot get it. Though you try to abandon it, it always remains. It is vast and unobstructed, utterly empty. Like a gourd floating on water, it cannot be reined in or held down. Since ancient times, when good people of the past have attained this, they've appeared and disappeared in the sea of birth and death, able to use it fully. There is no deficit or surplus. Like cutting up sandalwood, each piece is it. Since there is no place to locate it, Buddha is illusion and Dharma is illusion. The three worlds, 25 states of being, the sense organs, sense objects, and consciousness are utterly empty. When you get to this realm, there's no place to put even the word Buddha. If even the word Buddha has no applicability, where is there true thusness, Buddha nature, enlightenment, or nirvana? Thus the great being Fu said, fearing that people will give rise to a view of annihilation, we provisionally establish empty names.
All the sutras up to now, Ta Hui has not been able to establish himself as an enlightened being. Although he is trying hard, using the most logical and intellectual methods, but they are empty. They don't carry any weight. For example, when he says, all the senses, self-nature, dharma, all are illusory. One has to ask him, to whom you are talking, and who is talking. he has taken the word illusory without understanding its implications. And anybody who is not capable of both the intellectual potentialities and the nature of the no mind will not be able to figure it out whether this man is authentic or pseudo. Before I go into his sutras, I am reminded of a beautiful incident about the Adi Shankaracharya, the first Shankaracharya who established four temples and four seats of Shankaracharyas for all the four directions. Perhaps in the whole world, he is the most famous philosopher who is trying to establish that everything is illusory. And he was a great logician without doubt, because he went on conquering other philosophers. He moved all over the country, defeated all other schools of philosophy and established himself as the only right vision, the right perspective that all is Maya, illusion. He was in Varanasi. One day early in the morning, it was still dark. Traditionally, the Hindu monk should take a bath before sunrise. So he took a bath, and as he was coming up the steps, a man, perfectly knowingly, not accidentally, touched him. And told him, please forgive me, I am a Sudra, I am untouchable, I am sorry, but you will have to take another bath to clean yourself. And Shankaracharya was very angry. He said, it was not accidental the way you did. You did it knowingly. You should be punished in hell. The man said, when all is illusory, it seems only hell remains to be the real. It took Shankaracharya aback. And the man said, before you go for your bath, you have to answer my few questions. If you don't answer me, each time you will come up after the bath, I will touch you. And it was lonely and there was nobody else. Shankaracharya said, you seem to be a very strange person. What are your questions? He said, my first question is my body illusory? Is your body illusory? And if two illusions touch each other, what is the problem? Why you are going to take another bath? You are not practicing what you are preaching. How in an illusory world there can be a distinction between the untouchable and the Brahman, the pure and the impure? When both are illusory, when both are made of the same stuff as dreams are made of, what is the fuss? Shankaracharya, who has been conquering great philosophers, could not answer this simple man. Because any answer was going to be against his philosophy. If he says they are illusory, then there is no point to be angry about it. If he says they are real, then at least he accepts the reality of the bodies. Then what is the problem? If human bodies are real, then animal bodies, the bodies of the trees, the bodies of the planets, their stars, then everything is real. And the man said, I know you cannot answer this. It will finish your whole philosophy. I ask you another question. I am a Sudra, untouchable, impure. But where is my impurity? In the body or in my soul? Because I have heard you declaring that the soul is absolutely and forever pure. There is no way to make it impure. So how can be there a distinction between souls? Both are pure and absolutely pure. And there are no degrees in purity. That somebody is more pure and somebody is less pure. So perhaps it is my soul that has made you impure and you have to take another bath. That was even more difficult. But he has never been in such a trouble. Actual, practical, in a way scientific, rather than arguing about words, he has created a situation in which the great Adi Shankaracharya accepted his defeat. And the Sudra said, then don't go to take the bath again. And in a way, there is no river, no me, no you. All is a dream. just go in the temple, that too is a dream. Pray to the god, that too is the dream, because it is a projection of a mind which is illusory. An illusory mind cannot project anything real. What Tahui is saying here is something similar. He does not understand the implications. Let us look into his each sutra. This affair of enlightenment is like the bright sun in the blue sky, shining clearly, changeless and motionless, without diminishing or increasing. It shines everywhere in the daily activities of everyone, appearing in everything. Though you try to grasp it, you cannot get it. Though you try to abandon it, it always remains. It is vast and unobstructed, utterly empty. These words he must have borrowed, because these words are of a man who knows. Each single sentence is impeccably true. This affair, the affair of enlightenment or liberation or self-realization, is like the bright sun. That has been the experience of thousands of mystics, that when they reach to the highest peak of their consciousness, there is an explosion of light, something like atomic explosion. One of the great mystics, Kabir, says, it is so shiny that it seems 1,000 suns have risen suddenly around me. Wherever I see, the sun that I used to see seems to be completely paled down. The brightness of these 1,000 suns is so much, and it has purified every fiber and cell of my being, as if I have passed the way gold passes through fire. All that is not gold is destroyed by the fire. Out comes only the pure gold. Passing through this experience of 1,000 suns, for the first time I know what purity means. Its fragrance, its freshness, its absolutely newness, it is never stale. It is never past, it is never present, it is never future. You cannot divide it in time segments, it is always. It is the very nature of existence itself. So he is quoting these words without quotation marks, which is one of the cunningnesses of all intellectuals of the world. They go on stealing from every source and pretending as if it is their own experience. But they cannot manage it. Sooner or later, something immediately shows their stupidity. This affair is like the bright sun in the blue sky, shining clearly, changeless and motionless, without diminishing or increasing. It shines everywhere in the daily activities of everyone, appearing in everything. Though you try to grasp it, you cannot get it. Though you try to abandon it, it always remains. It is vast and unobstructed, utterly empty. These sentences are absolutely the sentences is stolen from someone who knows. And why I am saying they are stolen? Because just as we enter into further sutras, it becomes clear that he is not aware that they are showing his ignorance. Like a gold floating on water, it cannot be reined in or held down. Since ancient times, when good people of the path have attained this, they have appeared and disappeared in the sea of birth and death, able to use it fully. There is no deficit or surplus, like cutting up sandalwood, each piece is it. The first thing that he is going wrong is the enlightened people are not and cannot be called good people. One can become a good person without being enlightened. In fact, one can become a good person even without believing that there is consciousness, soul, or God. Do you think the atheists have not produced good people? Epicurus in Greece was a great atheist, but you cannot find a better man. You cannot find any blame in his life. In India, there has been a big school of Charvakas. They were atheists. They did not believe in any other world, in God, in reincarnation, in the existence of the soul, they were purely materialists, but they have produced such good people that even the atheist Hindu scriptures mention their originator with great respect as Acharya Brihaspati, the great master Brihaspati. They don't agree with his ideas, but they cannot disagree with his character, with his goodness. The enlightened person is beyond good and evil. You cannot confine him into the word good. He is neither good nor evil. He is simply aware. Good passes in front of him, and evil passes in front of him, and he remains unaffected. And whatever he does not follow any ethical code or any morality. He simply follows his own awareness. So the good is not a goal for him. It is simply a byproduct of his awareness. He is not doing any virtue. And he is not waiting for any reward. He is simply conscious. He has eyes. Do you think because you have eyes and you can see the trees and the sun, you need some reward for it? Because you can see the door, get out or get in, do you think you need some reward for it? The man of awareness simply has eyes, while the moralist has no eyes of his own. He is practicing what has been told traditionally is good. He does not know exactly whether it is good or not. Just people say it is good. He is born amongst people who believe it is good. And because doing it, he is honored, respected, his ego is fulfilled, he goes on doing it. It is a beautiful work. Here it is ego fulfilling, and there in the other world, after death, he will be showered with great rewards. He is doing really a good business. The enlightened man has no reward. He has got the greatest thing in the world, a total awareness. Now nothing can be added to his richness. He is neither good nor bad. This is where he shows his ignorance about the enlightened people. Secondly, he says, they have appeared and disappeared in the sea of birth and death. That is absolutely wrong. Once a man is enlightened, he never comes back into a womb. He goes beyond birth and death. Good men are bound to be born, are bound to die, but not the enlightened one. The very foundation of enlightenment is to get free from the wheel of birth and death and to enter into universal life, formless, without a body, because body is a confinement. It is an imprisonment. Consciousness need not have a body. It can be just pure, formless space. Once a man is enlightened, he never comes back into another body. And because he is saying that he appears and disappears in the sea of birth and death, he is showing his ignorance about the whole affair of enlightenment. The last sentence is certainly beautiful and significant, but it is again stolen. It is stolen from Gautam Buddha himself, because he was always asked that is the experience of awakening in different people has the same taste, the same flavor, or it is different. And he has used two statements. One is that the sea is vast, but you can taste it from anywhere. It is always salty. It has the same taste. And second, like cutting up sandalwood, each piece is it. You can cut the sandalwood in many pieces, but each piece will have the same fragrance. It will not be different to different pieces. This is a famous statement of Gautam Buddha. He has simply put it, there is no deficit or surplus. Like cutting up sandalwood, each piece is it. Since there is no place to locate it, Buddha is illusion and Dharma is illusion. The reason that he is giving why Buddha is illusion and why Dharma, the nature of enlightenment, is illusion, the reason is that you cannot find a place to locate them. Can you find a place to locate a space? Can you find a place to locate time? Is time illusory? Is space illusory? Just because you cannot locate them where they are, because they are formless, hence location is not possible. If you make it a criterion that anything that cannot be located and pointed at then only things which have boundaries will be real, and things which don't have any boundaries will not be real. Then body will be real because it can be located, and your consciousness will be unreal because it cannot be located. He does not understand the implication of what he is saying. And just in the beginning he was talking about the affair of enlightenment. And there he did not mention at all that he is talking about an illusory affair. It was bright sun in the blue sky, shining clearly, changeless, motionless, without diminishing or increasing. It shines everywhere. And a thing that shines everywhere, of course, cannot be located. You can locate a thing which exists somewhere, but a thing that exists everywhere cannot be located. Appearing in everything, if it was appearing in some things, location was possible. But if it is appearing in everything, if the rocks are also the Buddhas fast asleep, and they don't have any qualitative difference from the enlightened beings, they are aware and the rocks are fast asleep. But sleep or awakening don't make any change to their basic reality. In all those statements, he is saying, though you try to grasp it, you cannot get it, because it is so vast and so formless. That's why you cannot grasp it. Though you try to abandon it, it always remains. You cannot abandon it because it is everywhere. Wherever you will go, you will find it. It is within you, it is without you. And those statements were absolutely right. But they are not his experiences. The later sutras show that he cannot befool, he cannot deceive. Since there is no place to locate it, Buddha is illusory. Suddenly that which was shining in the blue sky like the bright sun has become illusory. And even the nature of awareness, which is dharma, has become illusory. The three worlds, the hell, the earth, the heaven, 25 states of being, the sense organs, sense objects, and consciousness are utterly empty. He is not living anything. Which is real, then to whom he is talking? Their ears are illusory. Their eyes are illusory. And so is the case about Tahui himself. All senses are illusory. The sense of seeing people to whom he is talking, the very fact of talking, if everything is illusory, then he is simply mad. What is the point of writing these sutras? For whom he is writing these sutras? And if everything illusory, do you think the paper on which these sutras are written, only the ink and the paper are real, although the man who was writing was illusory? When you get to this realm, there is no place to put even word Buddha. But that does not make Buddha illusory. It simply makes the word inapplicable. In that experience, no word is applicable. All words are just tentatively used. When one has become awakened, he cannot say anything about his experience of awakening. It is true, even there is not a space to place the word Buddha. If even the word Buddha has no applicability, where is their true thusness? Buddha nature, enlightenment, or nirvana? And he was talking about this affair in the beginning of the sutras, where it was all over the space. You could not grasp it, because it was too vast, and you could not abandon it. Because where you will abandon it, wherever you will go, you will find it. You are in it. You are it. Those statements were perfectly true. But now he is saying that if even Buddha has no applicability, where is their true thusness? Now where is the great idea of true thusness? Our Buddha nature, our enlightenment, are nirvana. Now everything is denied. In these small sutras, he has done a great work. What he says in the beginning and says it very clearly, he denies in the end. It is just intellectual gymnastics. It is true, the word Buddha is arbitrary. Not because the existence for which we are using the word Buddha is illusory, but because the experience is so vast that even the word Buddha cannot contain it. It is not that the experience of thusness is illusory. It is one of the greatest disciplines of awareness that has arisen in thousands of years. If one can say and feel and experience the nature of thusness, tathata, he will not be disturbed by pain. He will not be disturbed by pleasure. He will not be disturbed by failure. He will not be disturbed by success. He will simply say, "This is the case." So is the things that happen in nature. I am just a witness. Right now success is passing in front of me like a cloud. Soon the failure will follow, just like as days followed by night. This moment it is pleasure, soon it will bring pain. But I am absolutely aloof. They don't even touch me. I am beyond their grasp. This is one of the greatest approaches to reality that has come to man's understanding. The idea of thusness or suchness. And he is saying it is illusory. And then even enlightenment is illusory. Buddha nature is illusory. Nirvana is illusory. One has to ask Tahui that you can call something illusory only if there is something real in existence, otherwise how you will compare? You can call something illusory because something else is real. But if there is nothing real, then there is nothing illusory either. There are to exist together. He does not talk about what is real. In fact, all that is great and real he is calling illusory. Now, what is real? And if he says there is nothing which is real, then he has no right to call anything illusory. Thus, the great being Fu said, fearing that people will give rise to a view of annihilation, we provisionally established empty names. He goes on quoting enlightened people out of context. What the great master Fu said does not mean what he wants to mean it, because he has put in a context. He is calling enlightenment, Buddhahood, thusness, nirvana, all illusory. And then he quotes Master Fu, fearing that people will give rise to a view of annihilation if they are told that everything is illusory. That's why Buddhas have not said that. They have talked about enlightenment and thusness and Buddha nature and nirvana just so that people don't get the view of a total negativity, of an utter emptiness, annihilation. We provisionally establish empty names. All these names are empty. But Fu's meaning is totally different. What Tahui wants him to mean is not his meaning. He is saying we are giving provisionally empty names. But the empty names are given to realities, not to illusions. They are provisional and empty because they cannot contain the vast reality of nirvana, enlightenment, thusness, Buddha nature. So, just to give a small indication, we have used provisionally empty names. But once a person will come to experience himself, he will be able to see it that all names that were given were only provisional. In the beginning, to tell them that everything is illusory, they are already in misery. They are in deep anguish. And you tell them that there is no possibility of getting beyond it, because everything that can take you beyond is illusory. But very strange is the fact that he does not call that people's misery is illusory, their sadness is illusory, Their ego is illusory. Their intellect is illusory. Their mind is illusory. He does not mention these things. And if everything is truly illusory, then what is the fear? If illusory people feel afraid, what is wrong in it? The people don't exist. So let them fear. Non-existential people are fearing of annihilation. They are already no more. So what more annihilation can happen to them? No, the people are real. Although their conception about themselves is not real, they have to find out their authentic reality. And that authentic reality is so vast that we have to give it provisional names. Provisional, because once you have reached it, you will see that those names were just utilitarian. They don't define and they don't confine the experience. That's what Master Fu meant when he says we provisionally establish empty names. But if there is nobody, Master Fu is illusory. And the people he is concerned about, that they may become afraid of annihilation, don't exist. Then what is the problem? Everything is solved. There is no need of any preaching. There is no need of any scriptures. There is no need of any meditation. There is no need to go beyond your anguish, anxiety, misery. You yourself don't exist. How you can be miserable? Have you ever heard somebody who does not exist is feeling very much worried? Who has never existed is going through a migraine? The very idea is so stupid. Tahui's whole approach is to pick up all the great statements from different masters, to compile them and to give a fallacious impression to people that he himself is enlightened. But enlightenment is far away. He is living in a very deceptive state. He is deceiving others, but that is not great. He is deceiving himself. And this is not only the case with Tahui. This is the case with 99% of so-called religious scriptures. I am talking about all this nonsense to make you aware that whenever you come again the same kind of nonsense somewhere else, beware, don't get caught into it. Because the enlightened people have been respected so greatly that the intellectuals had a great jealousy. And they have tried in every way to imitate the enlightened people's statements. And there are thousands of treatises which have been produced by the intellectual people. And they are clever enough. They have the acumen, the logic, the reason, that they can deceive millions of people without any difficulty. Tahui even deceived the emperor of China, and he honored him by offering the title, the great Zen master Tahui. In fact, the word Tahui itself means the great Zen master. That word Tahui is not his real name. It has been conferred on him by the emperor of China. If he can deceive the emperor, what to say with ordinary people? I am talking about him just to make you aware. Don't get caught. Be very watchful when you are reading something, are listening something. Be alert and see whether those words are coming from a space of realization or they are just mind games. And whenever you find any kind of mind game, throw it away. Just the other day I was seeing a picture of a Zen master who is very famous in Japan for his action. The picture is, he is tearing scriptures and throwing them away. All around, scriptures are flying in the air and he is tearing them. And he became famous for this act. Looking into the picture, I was trying to find whether Tahui's sutras are in them or not.